It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, Ebro, and with me, as always, to go through another NFL draft prospect profile is my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. Adam, are you ready to talk some Dyami Brown today?
I'm very ready. Also ready for the... I guess I'm not ready for it because it happened already, but the Rashad Bateman Pro Day. If anybody wants to jump ship on Rashad Bateman, feel free. I will not be doing it. No. But yeah, Dyami Brown, let's just say this. I don't not like him as a player, but I don't have him as my wide receiver three like Chris Sims does. I'll say that.
Why do we keep bringing his name up on this podcast? Good Lord, it keeps happening, Adam. Like, it's becoming a too-often trend. No, Dyami Brown is not a top three wide receiver in this class. Like, let's get that out of the way right now. Like, I'm not going to throw shade at the man. He's a talented player. But a top three wide receiver? Like, could you even, like, possibly get your head around that, Adam?
And he didn't even have Bateman in his top, like, six, and that hurt. That hurt
my
feelings.
Oh, the disrespect is real, man.
But real quick, these pro days, like, we obviously factor everything in and pay attention to it, but there's a lot of overreaction right now, and it's like, okay, like...
Nah, really?
Let's let's just sit back, take a second, breathe, let it marinate, and relax, because... yeah, pro day numbers are impressive, but like, it's not the end all be all. These players still have to go out there and play on the field. Speaking of playing on the field, though, before we get started, today, I hate to do this, I really do, but today's opening day of the Major League Baseball season.
Yeah, baby. Hey, look, you can bring that sport up on this podcast. Okay, let's talk about that. Yeah, dude, baseball is back, man. And there is a ton of content coming out from FTN Daily. I mean, dude, the Opto is live. Kyle Murray's got his article that just went live. I mean, have you been digging into all this stuff as well?
I'm not quite there with baseball yet. I'm going to be watching the games later and be like, oh, I forgot he plays for that team. But luckily, I mean, Kyle Murray, Javi, those guys do every sport. So, of course. But then you have, you know, Matty Wood, Matt Davis, he's going to be doing a bunch of content. He has the podcast over at the site. I mean, we have so much baseball content. We have a deal going on right now as well where you can save on all the baseball content. We have the, like you mentioned, the Opto. We've been teasing that for a while in Slack and everything. So for me, for someone who's been using all the basketball tools all year long and stuff like that, and it seems like forever ago that we're using the NFL tools, I mean, This is a whole new ball game for baseball with all these tools that you have available at FTN Fantasy and FTN Daily. So I'll be diving into that a lot more as I prepare for MLB DFS. But that we definitely have to plug that. I mean, it's huge.
Oh, man, it's so good. All the content is fantastic. Get signed up with the promo code FTC. Save 10% today. It is awesome, man. I'm not even gonna lie. I got some lineups I'm sweating right now, man, after first game right now. So some of my pitchers are going.
Did you roster Miguel Cabrera?
I did not. I didn't think that the year was 2012 or 2014.
Or that he would homer in a snowstorm in April.
Nope. I didn't see that in the range of outcomes.
I think it was
off
Shane Bieber, too, who's one of the best pitchers.
Yeah,
baseball,
man. So. I didn't see that coming. No, the year is not 2012. So no Miggy for me today. But dude, while we're on the subject of awesome stuff, man, you got to be heading to Collectible. Head to collectible.com/FTN. All kinds of great stuff. So right now, I am on the site. I am staring at... We're talking about baseball, Adam. I am staring at a 2016 Bowman Blue Refractor going live IPO for Fernando Tatis Jr. on April 2nd at 1 p.m. Eastern. You got to get in on this action. Share prices are starting at just $1. Use the code FTN when you sign up to get entered to win limited edition Topps Project 70s cards signed by DJ Ski and over $10,000 in sports cards prizes. So visit collectible.com/FTN for all the details. All right, we have talked about baseball. We have talked about all kinds of signed memorabilia. Let's get to Dyami Brown and discuss this fantastic prospect profile. So De'Ami Brown, coming out of UNC, 6'1", 185, ran a 4.4 at his pro day. You look at his production profile off the top, Adam. College Dominator sits at 56th percentile at 31.7. The yards per reception, and part of this is the way he was used in college, 20.1, a 94th percentile yards per reception mark. His target share is lower at 57th percentile, and his breakout age is okay, but it's not fantastic, sitting at 19.8, a 69th percentile. The guy went over 1,000 yards in each of the last two seasons, had over a 20% target share. Catch rates were meh, but you know, you can kind of explain away some of that considering how he was used. What stands out to you regarding De'Ami Brown just off the top, man?
Yeah, so you mentioned how he was used as mainly a vertical passing threat, but like 18.5 average depth of target. Like, pretty sure that leads the draft class. Like, and it's not just because, you know, like, we'll talk about some of the inconsistencies with him, but like, you can make the case in a really great wide receiver class with some really good players that can make plays deep down the field. You can make the case he's the best deep threat in this class. He was just that good in that department. According to PFF, he was second in deep yards with 543. You watched his film and it's like, oh, you know, Sam Howell's throwing deep, probably to De'Ami Brown. That was more often the case than not. So that was obviously what stands out the most with him, is how productive he was, you know, making plays deep down the field. Over 20 yards per catch in each of his last two seasons at North Carolina. Primarily played out, like, he did not play in the slot really at all, especially last year. Six slot snaps. So he's not going to be a guy that you kind of move around the formation. And I don't know if he's going to be a guy that you just kind of game plan and funnel targets to. But, like, we'll talk about a lot of these teams where he might fit. I think with his skill set and how he was used in college, he would be, like, a really ideal, probably third receiver on a team, but I don't know if he's got the ability or the versatility or the all-around, you know, polish in his game to be a number one or a really good number two.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. And like you're talking about, for his collegiate career, 96.6% of his snaps as an outside wide receiver. You look at some of his other metrics, his yards per route run were out of all wide receivers of 50 or more targets. 2019, he sat at 67th, which is niche. And that's despite being 11th out of all wide receivers in that sample size in ADOT. Now, 2020 was far kinder to him. 16th in yards per route run and 2nd in ADOT, standing at 18.4. So we're talking about a guy was used way down the field. I mean, you look at all the different metrics. I mean, it stands out because of his usage and what they expected out of him in that offense. And kind of leaning into his strengths, man. I mean, I saw a wide receiver that was able to separate deep. And that's, again, I think that's going to translate to the next level, even as an outside wide receiver. Because the way he would separate deep, he was good on double moves. You saw when he did get deep on his routes, whether it was a double move or whether it was a jab step in his route and he was just running a 9, there was an ability to do so, and he burnt multiple corners playing zone. You saw, and we can kind of get into also this with his areas that he can improve in his game. I saw good, not great, but I saw good ball tracking from him deep. Now, as far as like, and again, on some of these deep targets, you won't see versus a lot of the wide receivers that are used in the short and intermediate areas of the field, these opportunities for yards after the catch. Because a lot of times, like, you see that fall off. It just happens, man, with increase in ADOT. So the guys that are targeted deep down the field, whether they're having to slow up for a deep pass, like if it's not thrown and hitting them in stride, you won't see their yards after catch metrics stand out to you because of that usage and how they were utilized in an offense and the role they played. But De'Ami Brown, I did see when he was given the ball in space or he was hit in stride, there was some yak ability with him. Like, he was able to break some tackles. Now, is he the most physical wide receiver ever? No. But I think that he does have that in his skill set, that he can break arm tackles, that he can get you yards after the catch. So looking at the next level, and if he's not just utilized as a deep threat, but utilized in the intermediate areas of the field as well, I think that it's something that can translate and help him out.
Yeah, I think the strength that stood out the most to me was just the ability to get behind defenses, which he was obviously really good at last year, right? Mm-hmm. But he's a guy that pretty much won in vertical routes. Like, he ran so many routes via the vertical route, you know, like you mentioned, nines and stuff like that. And a lot of it was just him running by defenders. But he also, I watched a lot of his highlights where he would look like he was just going to run a straight up streak, a regular vertical, just running past a guy. And he would like slow down and then put his foot in the ground and go past him, like a little bit of a hesitation. And he'd put his foot in the ground and get even more separation. So I like that move. But in terms of a guy with an all around really, really good route tree, that's not really Diami Brown. Now, does that mean he can't be that at the NFL level? Not necessarily, but we're projecting him based off what we saw and how he was used at North Carolina, so that's kind of what we have to go on. And they kind of – I don't know. This is a little bit off topic, but when you were watching Diami Brown, right, and, like, I don't just watch – like, I don't just go on watch his highlights. I watch the game clip.
Yeah.
I came away impressed with Daz Newsome a lot, too.
Yeah, yeah,
he was kind of the guy they would move all over the field. And, of course – they had the best rushing attack in college football. But I think Diami Brown was also just great for those players because he'd get behind defenses and because you had to worry about him and with the safety help. And I think that helped Michael Carter, Javonte Williams, and Daz Newsome a lot too. So his value was there as a deep threat. Like he opened up a lot of things for the offense on top of making plays for himself deep down the field.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. Like, I think that he was able to, as that field stretcher, open up a lot of opportunities, whether it's the running game or targets underneath. And you look at him, I mean, when he was asked to win in the underneath, was he able to do it? 107 passer rating. Now, we do see, and this is one of the areas we're going to just all kick off it, areas of improvement for him. You do see the fact that, like, in targets 1 to 9 yards, he had 3 drops. And regarding his short area routes, I did see rounded routes. Like, I felt like he could have been better getting in and out of his breaks. You saw him on comebacks and things of that nature when he was running either curls and stuff. It took him a second to kind of gear down. I felt like he wasn't as sudden. Whether you see him running a 9 or something like that, that jab step was explosive, man. Like, that's how he got the separation or the double moves deep a lot of different times. It wasn't physicality. It wasn't like some of these other wide receivers that we see, if they're going to win deep, how they do it. So the areas that I think that he can hone to become a better player or a different player and translate to the NFL level is that I think his route running does need to get cleaned up, especially in the short and intermediate areas. Now, how much he's going to be able to change as far as his short area quickness and the suddenness on those routes is, I mean, that's fair to question. The other thing that really stood out on me, and the reason why I felt like his deep balls, the deep passing, he was good on tracking, but he was not strong at the catch point, man. You see him, and it's not so much getting bullied, but you do not see him go up and win these contested catch situations and turn those 50-50 balls into 60-40 balls. Like, that's not part of his game. You saw other parts where he could be strong at the catch point, and the corner just got it on him, man. Like, he would go up, and he would not win at the catch point. So
what was the game? What was it?
Are you talking about Wake Forest when he caught the one-arm one?
Well, there was that one. I think it was the same game on the opposite side of the field where the defender just wrestled the ball away from him in the end zone.
Yep, same game. I think it was
still,
like,
still no
clue
how he caught the first one either. Like, that, when I watched that play, I was like, oh, that's an interception. And then he just, it was an incredible play by Diami Brown. But then it was, that's what I have to consider. I think he's just inconsistent with his, physicality at the catch point and stuff like that. I think there was also some times where he would be running a route and he would run it too far towards the sideline and Sam Howell really wouldn't have a window to throw it. So it's just inconsistencies like that. And I think we should view, like, yards after the catch, like we talk about with a lot of other players. They haven't been used to be able to showcase that ability, so I don't know if it's a weakness or more of a question mark. I would put Diami Brown as more of a question mark in terms of yards after the catch, just because he didn't get anything done on screens or anything like that. It was, like I said, it was mostly vertical routes. So I'd be interested to see if he has more to offer in that regard, if he's used differently at the NFL level. But I do agree with the kind of inconsistency at the catch point with him.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't see him as, like, some of these other wide receivers we've discussed, man, like, where he went up and you were like, okay, like, in some of these quarterbacks, if
what you're saying is he's not Marvin Jones, right? I had to. Sorry.
He's not. No, no, you're right.
I'm going to try to do it every podcast to bring him up if I haven't already. And we'll just
keep a tracker. He's not, though. It's true, though. We're talking about guys that win vertical and stuff like that. He's not a guy that, at least at this point in his career, that I think is going to go up and win those 50-50 balls. Like, a quarterback that's used to throwing that, or is going to throw, not only throw a guy open, but say, okay, you're covered, and what is college open versus NFL open? And I'm going to throw it up there and expect you to win that ball. I don't think a quarterback should be expecting that out of Dyami Brown. Not at this point in his career, man. Like, we just, multiple seasons, like, that's just not a strength in his game. Now, can he get better at that? Sure. But you're talking about a guy that wins deep. It's not going to be on deep contested throws. Like, he's going to have to gain separation. He's going to have to burn some guys. And the speed element is there. Now, is he 4.3 speed? No. Is he fast enough to be a deep threat at the next level running 4.4s? Yes, then that's fine. And looking at leaning into the comp, man, on who we saw, just go ahead and kick it off. We've done this enough times. We discussed this off air. You are already going to do it. So I'm just going to go ahead and give you the platform, man. Go ahead. Who does he remind you of?
All right, so D-Bro and I have a show sheet where we just, you know, have some topics and stuff, but and we've done player comps for all these prospects we've broken down, but we don't really share our comps before the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow we both came to the conclusion that a little bit less versatile version of Jeremy Maclin is what stood out when we watched Dyami Brown. I'll add another one,
I was
too.
Not expecting you to say that name. Like, I was like, oh, I got a cop, and he's not even going to... Ah! Like, what? Why? I was cussing at you, like, right after you said the name. I'm like, are you serious? We haven't even talked about this. Go on, man.
Yeah, I was... Like, when you reacted like that, I was surprised, too. I thought you would go... almost anywhere else, but the measurables are pretty similar. You know, 6'6", 190 plus. Maclin and the speed's around the same. Maclin ran a 4.4 840. We mentioned Dyami was like 4.4. But I think the difference, and they both had similar college target shares too, for what it's worth. I think the difference is Maclin just was way more versatile at the NFL. Right, he was a good deep threat as well, but he would be used off screens. He was kind of used all over for Philadelphia and at times with Baltimore and the other stops he's made. That's the difference I have. So I'll add, I also think he reminds me a little bit of a guy that you like, and he's not as fast as him, but the way he's utilized is like Darius Slayton a lot. Slants, vertical routes. And he was good on slants when he got the opportunity, but it was mostly slants and vertical routes and not much after the catch. And guy, it's not going to always be a guy you throw a 50-50 ball to and say, okay, he's probably going to come away with it. Not like a Kenny Golladay or somebody like that.
So another player, and we're talking about, we always kind of give the range of outcomes because I think it's really unfair to these players to be like, all right, here's the ceiling outcome. Everybody's a top 10 wide. To be a top 10 wide receiver, there's only 10 of those in the NFL. Oh, never mind. I think that it's always important for us to give these ranges, man, because not everybody, regardless of how much we like them or whatever, is going to be that upper echelon wide receiver. So understanding the range for these players and what we're kind of giving you as expectations and their skill sets. Another guy that's around this same build, we talked about him, so go head back to that episode where we discussed wide receivers and how they are used with Matt Harmon and James Coe and all the reception perception data. Nelson Agholor was the other guy that I saw in his range of outcomes. Again, another guy, 6'190-ish, ran a 4.4. Now, Nelson Agholor was a first-round pick. You talk about a guy that, and you go back to the reception perception data. Like, he was used by Philly out of the slot. Tons of slants. That was the highest route percentage that he had back with Philly in 2017. Now, the other thing that he ran a ton of was 9 routes. And we're looking at how a guy like Dyami Brown could translate to the NFL. You see similar things in the profile. Now, are the breakout ages, is on paper Dyami Brown a better prospect than Nelson Agholor? Yes. The other thing about it is...
Is he, though?
I mean, look,
Aguilar's a pretty good prospect.
There are similarities here. Both are college dominators, sit in the 50th percentile, around that range. Their breakout age is Diami Brown's is a little bit better, but it's not. I mean, we're kind of splitting hairs. You're looking at one guy who's sitting at 19.8 versus 20.3. So, is there a difference? Yes, but not a ton. So, I think that it's important to understand what we're looking at for this player and the range of his outcomes. I think that Nelson Aguilar, and this is, again, we're talking about a guy in comps. We're discussing the inconsistencies in winning at the catch point, drops, also physicality and stuff in their routes, and the usage. I think Nelson Aguilar is a really, really close one for me regarding holes in their game. And if Diami Brown doesn't get any better than what he is right now as a prospect, as a player, I mean, do you see that in his range of outcomes, Adam?
No, I do see it. I do see it. I think it makes a lot of sense. So I just think with Aguilar, we get so accustomed to how up and down and oftentimes just flat out bad he's been. But coming out of USC, he was actually a really solid prospect. But I do agree that I that was somebody that was kind of on my mind when looking at him. It's just the only thing that stood out to me was I think Aguilar was a much better separator coming out of college than mm-hmm. Diami Brown is, because he kind of, you know, he did line up multiple ways. So we'll see. Like, landing spot is important for everybody, but I think it's especially important for a guy like Diami Brown.
I do too, and we're going to talk about that, man. I don't see him – I don't put him in that range of wide receivers that goes in the second round. I think that the fantasy football community, especially everything we've seen out on social media – is going to like him a lot more than maybe the NFL community, unless they're all just following Chris Sims' advice. I look at Diami Brown as a third-round wide receiver. I think he's a peg below a bunch of the guys that I think are going to go in that second-round range. I also won't be surprised if he falls into the fourth round. But right now, for our purposes, the teams that I think that could be a fit as far as like wide receiver type, need, things of that nature, there's two that stick out to me. And one of those being, and both of these are in the third round, one of those being the Houston Texans, who, as of right now, in three wide receiver sets, are going to start Brandon Cooks, Randall Cobb, and Andre Roberts, and whoever the hell else they want to roll out from their special teams unit, which apparently they're really concerned, and they want that to be a top five unit besides everything else in the NFL.
Well, they're going
to
be punting a lot, so.
I mean, hey, you know, when you gotta do it if you're going to be punting like 75 times every game. But my whole thing about it is that, like, I think that, one, there's a need. Two, you look at how the archetype for wide receivers, yes, I know it's a new coaching staff and things of that nature. There's a need there. I think that where he could fit into that rotation or on that depth chart, he would be starting outside, obviously. He would fit there for the Texans. The other team that stood out to me was the Las Vegas Raiders. They've got back-to-back picks in the third round at 80 and 81. You look at, and again, we're talking about Nelson Aguilar. So are they going to look at another guy? Because John Brown's only on a one-year deal. Yes, they drafted Bryan Edwards last year. Yes, they still have Henry Ruggs. I think that he fits some of the mold and the archetype for the wide receivers, or at least what they look for in wide receivers. So those are the two spots that stick out to me. Where would you see him falling in the NFL draft, and to what team?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I knew that Houston was a spot that you were targeting, and it's like we've talked about a lot of these prospects, and we haven't even mentioned Houston because they have, like, no picks. So, like, and they're a train wreck, so, like, we don't want players to go to Houston, but they do have a need there. I kind of like Carolina at 73rd overall in the third round. They obviously need to replace Curtis Samuel in some way. They used DJ Moore as a deep threat last year, but, like, maybe they could use him still in that role at times, but not, you know, as much as they did. And you know, draft Diami Brown, have him be the vertical guy. Robbie Anderson moved from the vertical guy to the slant, an intermediate guy last year, and that seemed to do well for him. And then you can use DJ Moore as kind of the alpha and just let him win all over the field. I kind of like that fit in Carolina. And then I'll also add, depending on what they do in the first couple rounds, Detroit maybe at 72, but it's like another vertical threat for Jared Goff when you already have Perriman and these guys. I don't know if that's exactly what they need. They just might need a guy that can just get open at will. And then outside of that, I do like the Raiders call. Washington might still go receiver. I don't know if they're going to go like a first or second round receiver now that they have Samuel, and they also added Adam Humphries. But maybe in the third round, just get another, you know, playmaker, the guy that you don't really have to worry about scheming targets for, because Terry McLaurin and Curtis Samuel are going to give you that, and you can kind of get this a player who I would believe is an upgrade over Cam Sims and some of the guys behind them in the depth chart.
Yeah, I think all those spots make a whole lot of sense regarding need, regarding fit. So I definitely see that, man. I mean, I think that they all, for all different reasons, make a ton of sense. And so, like, with Diami Brown, as soon as he's selected, like, if he decides, if a team decides to select him higher, like, a lot of these wide receivers that we're talking about right now, as soon as they go in the NFL draft, their stock is going to shoot up, man. Like, if Diami Brown somehow makes it into the second round, and you're already getting into best ball action over on Underdog, then you've got to be getting your exposure right now, because if we're wrong and he goes the second round, that ADP is going to creep up, man. So get signed up with the promo code FTN today. Look, baseball is going on. We talked about all that. Get into these best ball drafts, because regardless of, like, if we're wrong and you're right about it, and you go in Diami Brown and you get that exposure as a late round guy, he goes in the second round and a team is super high on him, ADP shoots up. You've already got exposure to him at that point. You don't have to draft him anymore. Kudos to you. So get signed up today. Use that promo code. Get into all these best ball drafts. There is no setting lineups. There's no trades. None of that mess. It is draft. Enjoy the hell out of it and win money at the end of the season. So visit Underdog Best Ball today for all this fantastic action. So Adam and I are going to be back later talking more Underdog, discussing our favorite stacks, as well as more NFL draft prospects leading up to the NFL draft. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.